opened itself to visitors. In order to earn some extra income, Shaw often played the role of tour guide or gave lectures. This was the grin he reserved for tourists, as he had grown used to their astounding scientific illiteracy.
Mr. Wong, I take it you're not a specialist in the field.
I work in nanotech.
Ah, makes sense. But you must have some basic understanding of the cosmic microwave background.
I don't know much. I know that as the universe cooled after the Big Bang, the leftover embers became the cosmic microwave background. The radiation fills the entire universe and can be observed in the centimeter wavelength range. I think it was back in the 60s when two Americans accidentally discovered the radiation when they were testing a supersensitive satellite reception antenna.
That's more than enough,
Shaw interrupted, waving his hands. Then you must know that unlike the local variations we observe in different parts of the universe, the overall fluctuation in the cosmic microwave background is correlated with the expansion of the universe. It's a very slow change, measured at the scale of the age of the universe. Even with the sensitivity of the Planck satellite, continuous observation for a million years might not detect any such shift. But you want to see a 5% fluctuation tonight? Do you realize what that would mean? The universe would flicker like a fluorescent tube that's about to burn out.
And it will be flickering for me,
Wong thought.
This must be some joke from Professor Ye,
Shaw said.
Nothing would please me more than to discover that it was a joke,
Wong said. He was about to tell Shaw that Ye didn't know the details of his request, but he was afraid that Shaw would then refuse to help him.
Well, since Professor Ye asked me to help you, let's do the observation. It's not a big deal. If you just need 1% precision, data from the antique Kobe's sufficient.
As he spoke, Shaw typed quickly at the terminal. Soon a flat green line appeared on the screen.
This curve is the real-time measurement of the overall cosmic microwave background. Oh, calling it a straight line would be more accurate. The temperature is 2.725 plus or minus 0.002K. The error range is due to the Doppler effect from the motion of the Milky Way, which has already been filtered out. If the kind of fluctuation you anticipate, in excess of 1%, occurs, this line would turn red and become a waveform. I would bet that it's going to stay a flat green line until the end of the world, though. If you want to see it show the kind of fluctuation observable by the naked eye, you might have to wait until long after the death of the sun.
I'm not interfering in your work, am I?
No. Since you need such low precision, we can just use some basic data from Kobe. Okay. It's all set. From now on, if such great fluctuations occur, the data will be automatically saved to disk.
I think it might happen around 1 o'clock a.m.
Wow, so precise. No problem, since I'm working the night shift anyway. Hey, have you had dinner yet? Good. Well, then I'll take you on a tour.
The night was moonless. They walked along the row of antenna dishes, and Shaw pointed to them.
Breathtaking, aren't they? That's too bad that they're all like the ears of a deaf man.
Why?
Ever since construction was completed, interference has been unceasing in the observational bands. First, there were the paging stations during the 80s. And now it's the scramble to develop mobile communications networks and cell towers. These telescopes are capable of many scientific tasks, surveying the sky, detecting variable radio sources, observing the remains of supernovae. But we can't perform most of them. We've complained to the State Regulatory Radio Commission many times, never with any results. How can we get more attention than China Mobile, China Unicom, China Netcom? Without money, the secrets of the universe are worth shit. At least my project only depends on satellite data and has nothing to do with these tourist attractions.
In recent years, commercial operation of basic research has been fairly successful, like in high-energy physics. Maybe it would be better if the observatories were built in places farther away from cities.
It all comes down to money. Right now, our only choice is to find technical means to shield against interference. Well, it would be much better if Professor Yeh were here. She accomplished a lot in this field.
So the topic of conversation turned to Yeh Wenxia, and from her student, Wang finally learned about her life. He listened as Sha told of how she witnessed the death of her father during the Cultural Revolution, how she was falsely accused at the Production and Construction Corps, how she then seemed to disappear until her return to Beijing at the beginning of the 90s, when she began teaching astrophysics at Tsinghua, where her father had also taught, until her retirement.
It was only recently revealed that she'd spent more than 20 years at Red Coast Base.
Wang was stunned.
You mean those rumors?
Most turned out to be true. One of the researchers who developed the deciphering system for the Red Coast Project emigrated to Europe and wrote a book last year. Most of the rumors you hear came out of that book. Many who participated in Red Coast are still alive.
That is a fantastical legend.
Especially for it to happen during those years.
Absolutely incredible. They continued to speak for a while. Sha asked the purpose behind Wang's strange request. Wang avoided giving a straight answer, and Sha didn't press. The dignity of a specialist did not allow Sha to express too much interest in a request that clearly went against his professional knowledge. Then they went to an all-night bar for tourists and sat for 2 hours. As Sha finished one beer after another, his tongue loosened even more. But Wang became anxious, and his mind kept returning to that green line on the terminal in Sha's office. It was only at 10 to 1 in the morning that Sha finally gave in to Wang's repeated pleas to go back to the lab. The spotlights that had lit up the row of radio antennas had been turned off, and the antennas now formed a simple two-dimensional picture against the night sky, like a series of abstract symbols. All of them gazed up at the sky at the same angle, as though waiting expectantly for something. The scene made Wang shudder, despite the warmth of the spring evening. He was reminded of the giant pendulums in Three-Body. They arrived back at the lab at 1. As they looked at the terminal, the fluctuation was just getting started. The flat line turned into a wave, the distance between one peak and the next inconstant. The line's color became red, like a snake awakening after hibernation, wriggling as its skin refilled with blood.
It must be a malfunctioning Kobe!
Sha stared at the waveform, terrified.
It's not a malfunction.
Wang's tone was exceedingly calm. He had learned to control himself when faced with such sights.
We'll know soon enough, Sha said.
He went to the other two terminals and typed rapidly to bring up the data gathered by the other two satellites, WMAP and Planck. Now, three waveforms moved in sync across the three terminals, exactly alike. Sha took out a notebook computer and rushed to turn it on. He plugged in a network cable and picked up the phone. Wang could tell from the one-sided conversation that he was trying to get in touch with the Urumqi Radio Astronomy Observatory. He didn't explain to Wang what he was doing, his eyes locked onto the browser window on the notebook. Wang could hear his rapid breathing. A few minutes later, a red waveform appeared in the browser window, moving in step with the other three. The three satellites and the ground-based observatory confirmed one fact. The universe was flickering.
Can you print out the waveform?
Wang asked. Sha wiped away the cold sweat on his forehead and nodded. He moved his mouse and clicked print. Wang grabbed the first page as soon as it came out of the laser printer and with a pencil began to match the distance between the peaks with the Morse code chart he took out of his pocket.
Short, long, 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 long. Short, long, 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 long. Long, 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 long. Long, 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 short, short. Long, 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 short, short, short. Short, short, long, long, long. Short, long, 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 long. Long, 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 short, short, short. Short, 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 long, long. Long, long, short, short, short. That's 1108:21:37.
Wang thought.
short, long, 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 short, long, 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 short, short, long, 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 short, 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 long, 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 short, long, 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 short, 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 long, 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 short, 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 short. That's 1108:21:36.
The countdown continued at the scale of the universe. 92 hours had already elapsed, and only 1,108 hours remained. Shaw paced back and forth anxiously, pausing from time to time to look at the sequence of numbers Wong was writing down.
"Can't you tell me what's going on?"
he shouted.
"I can't possibly explain this to you, Dr. Shaw. Trust me."
Wong pushed away the pile of papers filled with waveforms. As he stared at the sequence of numbers, he said,
"Maybe the three satellites and the observatory are all malfunctioning."
"You know that's impossible."
"What if it's sabotage?"
"Also impossible. To simultaneously alter the data from three satellites and an observatory on Earth? You're talking about a supernatural saboteur."
Wong nodded. Compared to the idea of the universe flickering, he would prefer a supernatural saboteur. But Shaw then deprived him of this last glimmer of hope.
"It's easy to confirm this. If the cosmic microwave background is fluctuating this much, we should be able to see it with our own eyes."
"What are you talking about? The wavelength of the cosmic microwave background is 7 centimeters. That's 5 orders of magnitude longer than the wavelength of visible light. How can we possibly see it?"
"Using 3K glasses?"
3K glasses?
"It's a sort of science toy we made for the Capitol Planetarium. With our current level of technology, we could take the 6-meter horn antenna used by Penzias and Wilson almost half a century ago to discover the cosmic microwave background and miniaturize it to the size of a pair of glasses. Then we added a converter in the glasses to compress the detected radiation by 5 orders of magnitude so that 7-centimeter waves are turned into visible red light. This way visitors can put on the glasses at night and observe the cosmic microwave background on their own. And now we can use it to see the universe flicker."
"Where can I find these glasses?"
"At the Capitol Planetarium. We made more than 20 pairs.
I must get my hands on a pair before 5.
Shaw picked up the phone. The other side picked up only after a long while. Shaw had to expend a lot of energy to convince the person awakened in the middle of the night to go to the planetarium and wait for Wong's arrival in an hour. As Wong left, Shaw said,
"I won't go with you. What I've seen is enough, and I don't need any more confirmation. But I hope that you will explain the truth to me when you feel the time is right. If this phenomenon should lead to some research result, I won't forget you."
Wong opened the car door and said,
"The flickering will stop at 5 in the morning. I'd suggest you not pursue it after this. Believe me, you won't get anywhere."
Shaw stared at Wong for a long time and then nodded.
"I understand. Strange things have been happening to scientists lately."
"Yes."
Wong ducked into the car. He didn't want to discuss the subject any further.
"Is it our turn?"
"It's my turn, at least."
Wong started the engine. An hour later, Wong arrived at the new planetarium and got out of the car. The bright lights of the city penetrated the translucent walls of the immense glass building and dimly revealed its internal structure. Wong thought that if the architect had intended to express a feeling about the universe, the design was a success. The more transparent something was, the more mysterious it seemed. The universe itself was transparent. As long as you were sufficiently sharp-eyed, you could see as far as you liked. But the farther you looked, the more mysterious it became. The sleepy-eyed planetarium staffer was waiting by the door for Wong. He handed him a small suitcase and said,
"There are 5 pairs of 3K glasses in there, all fully charged. The left button switches it on. The right dials for adjusting brightness. I have 12 more pairs upstairs. You can look as much as you like, but I'm going to take a nap now in the room over there." "Oh, this Dr. Shaw must be mental."
He went into the dim interior of the planetarium. Wong opened the suitcase on the back seat of his car and took out a pair of 3K glasses. It resembled the display inside the panoramic viewing helmet of the V-suit. He put the glasses on and looked around. The city looked the same as before, only dimmer. Then he remembered that he had to switch them on. The city turned into many hazy, glowing halos. Most were fixed, but a few flickered or moved. He realized that these were sources of radiation in the centimeter range, all now converted to visible light. At the heart of each halo was a radiation source. Because the original wavelengths were so long, it was impossible to see their shapes clearly. He lifted his head and saw a sky glowing with a faint red light. Just like that, he was seeing the cosmic microwave background. The red light had come from more than 10 billion years ago. It was the remnants of the Big Bang, the still warm embers of creation. He could not see any stars. Normally, since visible light would be compressed to invisible by the glasses, each star should appear as a black dot. But the diffraction of centimeter wave radiation overwhelmed all other shapes and details. Once his eyes had grown used to the sight, Wong could see that the faint red background was indeed pulsing. The entire sky flickered, as if the universe was but a quivering lamp in the wind. Standing under the flashing dome of the night sky, Wong suddenly felt the universe shrink until it was so small that only he was imprisoned in it. The universe was a cramped heart, and the red light that suffused everything was the translucent blood that filled the organ. Suspended in the blood, he saw that the flickering of the red light was not periodic. The pulsing was irregular. He felt a strange, perverse, immense presence that could never be understood by human intellect. Wong took off the 3K glasses and sat down weakly on the ground, leaning against the wheel of his car. The city at night gradually recovered the reality of visible light. But his eyes roamed, trying to capture other sights. By the entrance of the zoo across the street, there was a row of neon lights. One of the lights was about to burn out and flickered irregularly. Nearby, a small tree's leaves trembled in the night breeze, twinkling without pattern as they reflected streetlight. In the distance, the red star atop the Beijing Exhibition Center's Russian-style spire reflected the light from the cars passing below, also twinkling randomly. Wong tried to interpret the flickers as Morse code. He even felt that the wrinkles in the flags flapping next to him and the ripples in the puddle on the side of the road might be sending him messages. He struggled to understand all the messages and felt the passing of the countdown second by second. He didn't know how long he stayed there. The planetarium staffer finally emerged and asked him whether he was done. But when he saw Wong's face, sleep disappeared from the staffer's eyes and was replaced by fear. He packed up the 3K glasses, stared at Wong for a few seconds, and quickly left with the suitcase. Wong took out his mobile and dialed Shen Yufei's number. She picked up right away. Perhaps she was also suffering from insomnia.
"What happens at the end of the countdown?"
Wong asked.
"I don't know."
She hung up.
"What can it be? Maybe my own death, like Yang Dong's. Or maybe it will be a disaster, like the great tsunami that swept through the Indian Ocean more than a decade ago. No one will connect it to my nanotech research. Could it be that every previous great disaster, including the two world wars, was also the result of reaching the end of ghostly countdowns? Could it be that every time there was someone like me, who no one thought of, who bore the ultimate responsibility? Or maybe it signals the end of the whole world. In this perverse world, that would be a relief."
One thing was certain. No matter what was at the end of the countdown, in the remaining 1,000 or so hours, the possibilities would torture him cruelly, like demons, until he suffered a complete mental breakdown. Wong ducked back into the car and left the planetarium. Just before dawn, the roads were relatively empty, but he didn't dare to drive too fast, feeling that the faster the car moved, the faster the countdown would go. When a glimmer of light appeared in the eastern sky, he parked and walked around aimlessly. His mind was empty of thoughts. Only the countdown pulsed against the dim red background of cosmic radiation. He seemed to have turned into nothing but a simple timer, a bell that tolled for he knew not whom. The sky brightened. He was tired, so he sat down on a bench. When he lifted his head to see where his subconscious had brought him, he shivered. He sat in front of St. Joseph's Church at Wong Fu Tsing. In the pale white light of dawn, the church's Romanesque vaults appeared as three giant fingers pointing out something in space for him. As Wong got up to leave, he was held back by a snippet of hymnal music. It wasn't Sunday, so it was likely a choir rehearsal. The song was Come, Gracious Spirit, Heavenly Dove. As he listened to the solemn, sacred music, Wong Miao once again felt that the universe had shrunk until it was the size of an empty church. The domed ceiling was hidden by the flashing red light of the background radiation, and he was an ant crawling through the cracks in the floor. He felt a giant, invisible hand caressing his trembling heart, and he was once again a helpless babe. Something deep in his mind that had once held him up softened like wax and collapsed. He covered his eyes and began to cry. Wong's cries were interrupted by laughter.
Another one bites the dust.
He turned around. Captain Xu Qiong stood there, blowing out a mouthful of white smoke. 10. Da Xu. Xu sat down next to Wong and handed him his car keys.
You parked right at the intersection of Dongden. If I'd arrived just a minute later, the traffic cops would have had it towed.
Da Xu, if I had known you were following me, I would have been comforted, Wong thought,
switching to Xu Qiong's familiar nickname in his mind, though self-respect made him hold back the words. He accepted a cigarette from Da Xu, lit it, and took his first drag since he quit several years ago.
So, how's it going, buddy? Finding it hard to bear? I said you couldn't handle it, and you insisted on playing the tough guy.
You wouldn't understand.
Wong took several more deep puffs.
Your problem is you understand too well. Fine. Let's go grab a bite.
I'm not hungry.
Then we'll go drinking. My treat.
Wong got into Dasha's car, and they drove to a small restaurant nearby. It was still early, and the place was deserted.
Two orders of quick fried tripe and a bottle of erguato,
Dasha shouted, without even looking up. He was obviously a regular here. As he stared at the two plates filled with black slices of tripe, Wong's empty stomach began to churn, and he thought he was going to be sick. Da Xu ordered him some warm soy milk and fried pancakes, and Wong forced himself to eat some. Then they drank shots of erguato. He began to feel lightheaded, and his tongue loosened. Gradually, he recounted the events of the last 3 days to Da Xu. Even though he knew that Da Xu probably knew everything already, maybe Da Xu even knew more than he did.
You're saying that the universe was winking at you?
Da Xu asked as he slurped down strips of tripe like noodles.
That's a very appropriate metaphor.
Bullshit.
Your lack of fear is based on your ignorance.
More bullshit. Come, drink.
Wong finished another shot. Now the world was spinning around him, and only the tripe-chomping Xu Qiong across from him remained stable. He said,
Da Xu, have you ever considered certain ultimate philosophical questions? For example, where does man come from? Where does man go? Where does the universe come from? Where does the universe go, etc.?
Nope.
Never?
Never.
You must see the stars. Aren't you awed and curious?
I never look at the sky at night.
How is that possible? I thought you often worked the night shift.
Buddy, when I work at night, if I look up at the sky, The suspect is gonna escape.
We really have nothing to say to each other.
All right.
Drink. To be honest, even if I were to look at the stars in the sky, I wouldn't be thinking about your philosophical questions. I have too much to worry about. I gotta pay the mortgage, save for the kids' college, and handle the endless stream of cases. I'm a simple man, without a lot of complicated twists and turns. Look down my throat and you can see out my ass. Naturally, I don't know how to make my bosses like me. Years after being discharged from the army, my career is going nowhere. If I weren't pretty good at my job, I would have been kicked out a long time ago. You think that's not enough for me to worry about? You think I've got the energy to gaze at stars and philosophize?
You're right. All right, drink up.
But I did indeed invent an ultimate rule.
Tell me.
Anything sufficiently weird must be fishy.
What kind of crappy rule is that?
I'm saying that there's always someone behind things that don't seem to have an explanation.
If you had even basic knowledge of science, you'd know it's impossible for any force to accomplish the things I experienced. Especially that last one. To manipulate things at the scale of the universe? Not only can you not explain it with our current science, I couldn't even imagine how to explain it outside of science. It's more than supernatural. It's super... I don't know what.
I'm telling you, that's bullshit. I've seen plenty of weird things.
Then tell me what I should do next.
Keep on drinking. And then sleep.
Fine.
Wong Miao had no idea how he got back into his car. He tumbled into the back seat and fell into a dreamless slumber. He didn't think that he was asleep for long, but when he opened his eyes, the sun was already near the horizon in the west. He got out of the car. Even though the alcohol that morning had made him weak, he did feel better. He saw that he was at one corner of the Forbidden City. The setting sun shone on the ancient palace and turned into bright gold ripples in the moat. In his eyes, the world became, once again, classical and stable. Wong sat until it got dark, enjoying the peace that had been missing from his life. The black Volkswagen Santana that he was now so familiar with pulled out of the traffic streaming through the street and braked to a stop right in front of him. Xu Qiang got out of the car.
Slept well? Da Xu growled.
Yes. What next?
Oh, you? Go have dinner. Then drink a little more. Then sleep again.
Then what?
Then? Don't you have to go to work tomorrow?
But the countdown. There's only 1,091 hours left.
Fuck the countdown. Your first priority right now is to make sure you can stand straight and not collapse into a heap. Then we can talk about other things.
Dasha. Can you tell me something about what's really going on? I'm begging you.
Da Xu stared at Wong a while. Then he laughed.
I've said the very same thing to General Chung several times. We're in the same boat, you and I. I'll be honest. I know fucking shit. My pay grade is too low, and they tell me nothing. Sometimes I think this is a nightmare.
But you must know more than I.
Fine. I'll tell you what little I know.
Da Xu pointed to the shore of the moat around the Forbidden City. The two found a spot and sat down. It was now night, and traffic flowed ceaselessly behind them like a river. They watched their shadows lengthening and shortening over the moat.
In my line of work, it's all about putting together many apparently unconnected things. When you piece them together the right way, you get the truth. For a while now, strange things have been happening. For example, there's been an unprecedented wave of crimes against academia and science research institutions. Of course, you know about the explosion at the Liangxiang Accelerator construction site. There was also the murder of that Nobel laureate. The crimes were all unusual. Not for money, not for revenge. No political background, just pure destruction. Other strange things didn't involve crimes. For example, the frontiers of science and the suicides of those academics. Environmental activists have also become extra bold. Protest mobs at construction sites to stop nuclear power plants and hydroelectric dams. Experimental communities returning to nature. And other apparently trivial matters. Do you go to the movies?
No, not really.
Recent big-budget films all have rustic themes. The setting is always green mountains and clear water, with handsome men and pretty women of some indeterminate era living in harmony with nature. To use the words of the directors, they represent the beautiful life before science spoiled nature. Take Peach Blossom Spring. It's clearly the sort of film that no one wants to see, but they spent hundreds of millions to make it. There was also this science fiction contest with the top reward of $5 million for the person who imagined the most disgusting possible future. They spent another few hundred million to turn the winning stories into movies. And then you've got all these strange cults popping up everywhere, where every cult leader seems to have a lot of money.
What does that last bit have to do with everything you mentioned before?
You have to connect all the dots. Of course, I didn't need to busy myself with such concerns before, but after I was transferred from the crime unit to the Battle Command Center, it became part of my job. Even General Chung is impressed by my talent for connecting the dots.
And your conclusion?
Everything that's happening is coordinated by someone behind the scenes with one goal, to completely ruin scientific research.
Who?
I have no idea. But I can sense the plan. A very comprehensive, intricate plan. Damage scientific research installations. Kill scientists. Drive scientists like you crazy and make you commit suicide. But the main goal is to misdirect your thoughts until you're even more foolish than ordinary people.
Your last statement is really perceptive.
At the same time, they want to ruin science's reputation in society. Of course, some people have always engaged in anti-science activities, but now it's coordinated.
I believe it.
Now you believe me. So many of you scientific elites couldn't figure it out, and I, having gone only to vocational school, had the answer? Ha! After I explained my theory, the scholars and my bosses all ridiculed it.
If you had told me your theory back then, I'm sure I wouldn't have laughed at you. Take those frauds who practice pseudoscience. Do you know who they're most afraid of?
Scientists, of course.
No. Many of the best scientists can be fooled by pseudoscience, and sometimes devote their lives to it. But pseudoscience is afraid of one particular type of people who are very hard to fool. Stage magicians. In fact, many pseudoscientific hoaxes were exposed by stage magicians. Compared to the bookworms of the scientific world, your experience as a cop makes you far more likely to perceive such a large-scale conspiracy.
Well, there are plenty of people smarter than me. People in positions of power well aware of the plot. When they ridiculed me at first, it was only because I wasn't explaining my theory to the right people. Later on, my old company commander, General Chung, had me transferred. but I'm still not doing anything other than running errands. That's it. Now you know as much as I do.
Another question. What does this have to do with the military?
I was baffled, too. I asked them, and they said that now that there's a war, of course the military would be involved. I was like you, thinking that they were talking nonsense. But no, they weren't joking. The army really is on high alert. There are 20-some battle command centers like ours around the globe. And above them, there's another level of command structure. But no one knows the details.
Who's the enemy?
No idea. NATO officers are now stationed in the war room of the PLA General Staff Department, and a bunch of PLA officers are working out of the Pentagon. Who the fuck knows who we're fighting?
This is all so bizarre. Are you sure it's all true?
A bunch of my old buddies from the Army are now generals, so I know a few things.
The media has no idea about any of this?
Ah, that's another thing. All the countries are keeping a tight lid on this, and they've been successful so far. I can guarantee you that the enemy is incredibly powerful. Those in charge are terrified. I know General Chung very well. He's the sort who's afraid of nothing, not even the sky falling. But I can tell that he's worried about something much worse right now. They're all scared out of their wits, and they have no confidence that we'll win.
If what you say is true, then we should all be frightened.
Everyone is afraid of something. The enemy must be, too. The more powerful they are, the more they have to lose to their fears.
What do you think the enemy is afraid of?
You! Scientists! The odd thing is that the less practical your research is, the more they're afraid of you. Like abstract theories, the kind of thing Yang Dong worked on. They are more frightened of such work than you are of the universe winking at you. That's why they're so ruthless. If killing you would solve the problem, you'd all be dead by now. But the most effective technique remains disrupting your thoughts. When a scientist dies, another will take his place. But if his thoughts are confused, then science is over.
You're saying they're afraid of fundamental science?
Yes. Fundamental science.
But my research is very different in nature from Yang Dong's. The nanomaterial I work on isn't fundamental science. It's just a very strong material. What's the threat to them?
You're a special case. Usually they don't bother those engaged in applied research. Maybe the material you're developing really scares them.
Then what should I do?
Go to work and keep up your research. That's the best way to strike back at them. Don't worry about that shitty countdown. If you want to relax a bit after work, play that game. If you can beat it, that might help.
That game? Three Body? You think it's connected to all this?
Definitely connected. I know that several specialists at the Battle Command Center are playing it, too. It's no ordinary game. Someone like me, fearless, out of ignorance, can't play it. It has to be someone knowledgeable like you.
Anything else?
No. But if I find out more, I'll let you know. Keep your phone on, buddy. Keep your head screwed on straight. And if you get scared again, just remember my ultimate rule.
Da Shu drove away before Wong had a chance to thank him.
11.
Three body. Water and fiery flames. Wang Miao returned home, stopping on the way to buy a V-suit. His wife told him that people from work had been trying to get a hold of him all day. Wang turned on his phone, checked his messages, and returned a few calls. He promised he'd be at work tomorrow. At dinner, he followed Da Shu's advice and drank some more. But he didn't feel sleepy. After his wife went to bed, he sat in front of the computer, put on his new V-suit, and logged in to Three-Body. Desolate plain at dawn. Wang stood in front of King Zhou's pyramid. The snow that had once covered it was gone, and the blocks of stone were pockmarked by erosion. The ground was now a different color. In the distance were a few massive buildings that Wang guessed were dehydratories, but they were of a different design than the ones he had seen last time. Everything told him that eons had passed. By the faint dawn light, Wang looked for the entrance. When he found it, he saw that the opening had been sealed by blocks of stone. But next to it, there was now a staircase carved into the pyramid, leading all the way to the apex. He looked up and saw that the top had been flattened into a platform. The pyramid, once Egyptian in style, now resembled an Aztec one. Wang climbed up the stairs and reached the apex. The platform looked like an ancient astronomical observatory. In one corner was a telescope several meters high, and next to it were a few smaller telescopes. In another corner were a few strange instruments that reminded him of ancient Chinese armillary spheres, models of objects in the sky. His attention was drawn to the large copper sphere in the center of the platform. 2 meters in diameter, it was set on top of a complex machine. Propelled by countless gears, the sphere slowly rotated. Wang noticed that the direction and speed of its rotation constantly shifted. Below the machine was a large square cavity. By the faint torchlight within, Wang saw a few slave-like figures pushing a spoked horizontal wheel, which provided the power to the machine above. A man walked toward Wang. Like King Wen, when Wang had first encountered him, the man had his back against the sliver of light on the horizon, and he appeared to Wang as a pair of bright eyes floating in the darkness. He was slender and tall, dressed in a flowing black robe, his hair carelessly knotted on top of his head with a few strands waving in the wind.
"Hello,"
the man said.
"I'm Mozza."
"Hello, I'm Hiren."
"Ah, I know you."
Mozza grew excited.
"You were a follower of King Wen back in Civilization Number 137.
I did follow him here, but I never believed his theories."
"You're right."
Mozza nodded at Wang solemnly. Then he moved closer.
"During the 362,000 years you've been away, civilization has been reborn 4 more times. These civilizations struggled to develop through the irregular alternation of chaotic eras and stable eras. The shortest-lived one got only halfway through the Stone Age. But Civilization Number 139 broke a record and developed all the way to the Steam Age."
"You're saying that people from that civilization found the laws governing the sun's motion?"
Mozza laughed and shook his head.
"Not at all. They were just lucky."
"But the effort to do so has never ceased?"
"Of course not. Come, let us see the efforts of the last civilization."
Mozza led Wang to a corner of the observatory platform. The ground spread out beneath them like an ancient piece of leather. Mozza aimed one of the smaller telescopes at a target on the ground and gestured for Wang to look. Wang looked through the eyepiece and saw a strange sight, a skeleton. In the dawn light, it gave off a snow-white glint and appeared to be very refined. Astonishingly, the skeleton stood on its own. Its posture was graceful and elegant. One hand was held below the chin, as though stroking a long-missing beard. Its head tilted slightly up, as though questioning sky and earth.
That's Confucius,
Muazze said.
He believed that everything had to fit Li, the Confucian conception of order and propriety, and nothing in the universe could be exempt from it. He created a system of rights and hoped to predict the motion of the sun with it.
I can imagine the result.
Right you are. He calculated how the sun would follow the rites and predicted a 5-year stable era. And you know what? There was indeed a stable era, lasting a month.
And then one day the sun just didn't come out?
No. The sun rose that day as well. It rose to the middle of the sky and then went out.
What? Went out?
Yes. It gradually dimmed, became smaller, and then went out all of a sudden. Night fell. Oh, the cold. Confucius stood there and froze into a column of ice. And there he remains.
Was there anything remaining in the sky after the sun went out?
A flying star appeared in that location, like a soul left behind after the sun died.
You're sure that the sun really disappeared suddenly and the flying star appeared just as suddenly?
Yes, absolutely. You can check the historical annals. It was clearly recorded.
Wong thought hard about this information. He had already formed some vague ideas about the workings of the world of three-body. But this bit of news from Muazze overturned all his theories.
How can it be sudden?
He muttered in annoyance.
We're now in the Han Dynasty. I'm not sure if it's the Western Han or the Eastern Han.
You've stayed alive until now?
I have a mission. Observing the precise movements of the sun. Those shamans, metaphysicians, and Taoists are all useless. Like those proverbial bookish men who could not even tell types of grains apart, they do not labor with their hands and know nothing practical. They have no ability to do experiments, and they're immersed in their mysticism all day long. But I'm different. I know how to make things.
He pointed to the numerous instruments on the platform.
Do you think these can lead you to your goal?
Wong nodded specifically at the giant copper sphere.
I have theories, too, but they're not mystical. They're derived from a large number of observations. First, do you know what the universe is? It's a machine.
That's not very insightful.
Let me be more specific. The universe is a hollow sphere floating in the middle of a sea of fire. There are numerous tiny holes in the surface of the sphere, as well as a large one. The light from the sea of flame shines through these holes. The tiny ones are stars, and the large one is the sun.
That's a very interesting model.
Wong looked at the giant copper sphere again and guessed at its purpose.
But there's a problem with your theory. When the sun rises or sets, we can see its motion against the background of fixed stars. But in your hollow sphere, all the holes remain in fixed positions relative to each other.
Correct. That's why I've modified my model. The universal sphere is made of two spheres, one inside the other. The sky we can see is the surface of the inner sphere. The outer sphere has one large hole, while the inner sphere has many small holes. The light coming through the hole in the outer sphere is reflected and scattered many times in the space between the two spheres, filling it with light. Then the light comes in through the tiny holes in the inner sphere, and that's how we see the stars.
What about the sun?
The sun is the result of the large hole in the outer sphere being projected onto the inner one. The projection is so bright that it penetrates the inner sphere like the shell of an egg. And that's how we see the sun. Around the spot of light, the scattered light rays are also very bright and can be seen through the inner shell. That is why we can see a clear sky during the day.
What is the force that propels the two spheres in their irregular motion?
It's the force of the sea of fire outside the two spheres.
But the sun's brightness and size change over time. In your double shell model, the sun's size and brightness ought to be fixed. Even if the brightness of the flames in the sea of fire is inconstant, the size of the hole would not be.
Your conception of this model is too simplistic. As conditions in the Sea of Fire shift and change, the two shells will expand and shrink. This leads to changes in the size and brightness of the sun.
What about the flying stars?
Flying stars? Why do you care about them? They're not important. Maybe just some random dust flying about the inside of the universal spheres.
No, I think the flying stars are extremely important. Otherwise, how does your model explain the sudden extinguishing of the sun during the time of Confucius?
That's a rare exception. Maybe it was because a dark spot or cloud in the Sea of Fire just happened to pass over the big hole in the outer shell.
Wong pointed to the large copper sphere.
This must be your model, then?
Yes. I built a machine to replicate the universe. The complex gears that move the sphere simulate the forces from the Sea of Fire. The laws governing such motion are based on the distribution of flames in the Sea of Fire and the currents within it. I deduced them from hundreds of years of observations.
Can this sphere contract and expand?
Of course. Right now, it's slowly contracting.
Wong used the handrail at the edge of the platform as a fixed visual reference. He found Mwatsa's assertion to be true.
And there's an inner shell inside this sphere?
Of course. The inner shell moves within the outer shell through another complex set of mechanisms.
Truly a skillfully designed machine.
Wong's praise was heartfelt.
But I don't see a large hole in the outer shell to cast the sun's light onto the inner shell.
There is no hole. On the inner surface of the outer shell, I have installed a source of light to simulate the hole. The light source is made of the luminescent material gathered from hundreds of thousands of fireflies. I used a cool light because the inner shell is made of translucent plaster, which is not a good heat conductor. This way I can avoid the problem of too much heat accumulating inside the sphere that we would have with a regular source of light. The observer can then stay inside for a long time.
There's a person inside the sphere?
Yes. A clerk stands on top of a shelf with a wheeled base that is kept at the center of the sphere. After we set up the model universe to correspond to the current state of the real universe, the motion of the model thereafter should be an accurate simulation of the future, including the motion of the sun. After the clerk records the movements of the sun, we will have a precise calendar. This is the dream of hundreds of civilizations before us. And it looks like you have come at an opportune time. According to the model universe, a 4-year-long stable era is about to begin. Emperor Wu of Han has just issued the order to rehydrate based on my prediction. Let's wait for sunrise.
Mwatsa brought up the game's interface and slightly increased the rate of passage of game time. A red sun rose above the horizon, and the numerous frozen lakes and ponds scattered over the plain began to melt. These lakes had been covered by dust and had merged into the dun ground, but now they turned into numerous mirrors, as though the earth had opened many eyes. From up so high, Wong couldn't see the details of rehydration, but he could see more and more people gathered on the shores of the lakes, like swarms of ants coming out of their nests in spring. The world had once again been revived.
"Do you not want to join this wonderful life?"
Mwatsa asked, pointing to the ground below.
"When women are first revived, they crave love. There is no reason for you to stay here any longer. The game is over. I am the winner."
"As a piece of machinery, your model universe is indeed incomparable. But as for its predictions, may I use your telescope to observe something?"
"Please."
Mwatsa gestured at the large telescope. Wong walked up to the instrument and paused.
"How can I use it to observe the sun?"
Mwatsa retrieved a black, circular piece of glass.
"Use this smoked glass filter."
He inserted it in front of the eyepiece. Wong aimed the telescope at the sun, now halfway up the sky. He was impressed by Mwatsa's imagination. The sun did indeed look like a hole through which a sea of fire could be seen. A small view into a much larger hole. but as he examined the image in the telescope more closely, he realized that the sun was different from the sun he was used to in real life. The sun here had a small core. He imagined the sun as an eye. The core was like the eye's pupil, and though it was small, it was bright and dense. The layers surrounding it, by contrast, appeared insubstantial, wispy, gaseous. The fact that he could see through the outside layers to the core indicated that those layers were transparent or translucent, and the light from those layers was likely just scattered light from the core. The details in the image of the sun stunned Wong. He was once again assured that the game designers had hidden a vast amount of data within the superficially simple images, just waiting to be revealed by players. As Wong pondered the meaning of the sun's structure, he became excited. Because time in the game was now passing quickly, the sun was already in the west. Wong stood, adjusted the telescope to aim at the sun again, and tracked it until it dipped below the horizon. Night fell, and the bonfires across the plains mirrored the sky full of stars. Wong took off the smoked glass filter and continued to scan the skies. He was most interested in the flying stars, and shortly found two. He only had time to observe one of them briefly before it was dawn again, so he inserted the filter and continued to observe the sun. In this manner, Wong performed astronomical observations for more than 10 days, enjoying the thrill of discovery. Indeed, the fact that time within the game had been sped up helped with the observations, as the motion of celestial bodies became more apparent. On the 17th day of the stable era, 5 hours after the predicted time for sunrise, the world was still under cover of dark night. Multitudes thronged at the foot of the pyramid, their innumerable torches flickering in the chill wind.
The sun will probably not rise again. It is like at the end of civilization number 137,
Wong said to Mozza. Mozza stroked his beard and smiled confidently.
Do not fret. The sun will rise soon, and the stable era will continue. I've already learned the secret of the motion of the universal machine. My predictions cannot be wrong.
As though confirming Mozza's words, the sky over the horizon brightened with the dawn's first light. The crowd around the pyramid shouted in joy. The silvery light brightened far more rapidly than usual, as though the rising sun wanted to make up for lost time. Soon, the light covered half the sky, even though the sun was still below the horizon. The world was already as bright as midday. Wong looked toward the horizon and saw it giving off a blinding glare. The glowing horizon arched upward and became a curve that spread from one edge of his visual field to the other. He soon realized that he wasn't seeing the horizon, but the edge of the rising sun, an incomparably immense sun. After his eyes adjusted to the bright light, the horizon reappeared in its old place. Wong saw columns of black smoke rising in the distance, especially clear against the glowing background of the solar disk. A fast horse rushed toward the pyramid from the direction of the rising sun, the dust from its hooves forming a distinct line across the plains. The crowd parted before the horse, and Wong heard the rider scream at the top of his lungs,
"Dehydrate! Dehydrate!"
Following the rider was a herd of cattle, horses, and other animals. Their bodies were on fire, and they moved across the ground like a burning carpet. Half of the gigantic sun's disk was now above the horizon, taking up much of the sky. The earth seemed to slowly sink down against a brilliant wall. Wong could clearly make out the fine structures on the surface of the sun, eddies and surging waves filling the sea of flames, sunspots floating along random paths like ghosts, the corona lazily spreading out like golden sleeves. On the ground, both those who had already dehydrated and those who hadn't began to burn like countless logs thrown into the belly of a furnace. The flames that consumed them were even brighter than glowing charcoal in a furnace, but were quickly extinguished. The giant sun continued to rise, and soon filled most of the sky. Wong looked up and felt his perspective shift. Suddenly, he was no longer looking up, but down. The surface of the giant sun became a fiery earth, and he felt himself falling toward this brilliant hell. Lakes and ponds began to evaporate, and puffs of white steam rose up like mushroom clouds,